You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Coming to you live on the Finding Your Forte Talk Radio Show on Up to Me. We are really excited about our guest here today. She is all 32 teeth smiling, and we're really excited about this for a number of reasons. So I am shortly going to introduce you here to you, introduce you to. Sometimes you just got to slow down, Erin.
Okay.
Just slow down.
It's okay, we all do.
To Erin White, CEO of Hexagon Outsourcing, friend, colleague, client, partner, all of the amazing dimensions of our relationship we're going to bring to the surface in this conversation today, and I'm really excited about it. Erin, hello, and how are you today?
Hello, I am so happy to be here with you. As Reggie, you mentioned, we have had a lot of touch points in our relationship, and I'm happy about all of them. And I'm so happy to be here, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you fitting us in your busy schedule. I know that we've had some people having your people contact my people to be able to schedule this time. So they worked it out, and you're here today. So we're just going to have a good conversation today. Why you should be excited about this conversation. So Erin and I have been in and out of our pursuit of purpose together for some time now. And I feel like each chapter along the way has some pretty amazing nuggets. And so if I do a good job today, all those nuggets will come out.
I'm sure you'll do a great job.
So Erin, for some time now, has been a really close friend and colleague for your crescendo as a venture, but then, of course, Reggie Hammond as a friend. And I remember back, our relationship really started when I got to know Erin through a couple of other clients. And as they were on their path to pursuit of purpose, Erin would dash in in her very magnificent way. If you know anything about Erin, she also always does so with magnificence. She would dash in. And of course, what I only learned later was that these clients that were mutual friends were whispering, "Hey, you need to talk to Reggie," because they saw something bubbling just beneath the surface, ready to come forth. And it didn't always happen right on time. And she would come and we would have conversations. She'd be like, "Not now, but I'm coming."
And I always keep my commitment.
So I really want to bring those conversation to the surface, but not before I give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, to tell us what you're up to, and then give us a bit of a guided tour through your career to date.
Okay.
Even going back as far as the fine institutions of higher ed,
okay,
both of them that I'm really excited, and I know you got groupies that are probably dialed in right now just waiting on you to represent them. So So introduce us to Erin.
Okay, so I'll start from the beginning and lead up to now, if that's okay.
Okay.
And so, as already stated, my name is Erin White. Originally, I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, so I'm going to shout out the hometown. And I think what Reggie is alluding to, I went to Howard University, where I got my Bachelor's of Business Administration in Hospitality Management, HU. And I did that, and I had a storied career in New York City thereafter. My first job was at the Waldorf Astoria in their management and training program, and that was a wonderful opportunity where I was able to meet heads of state, stars, and just really learn a lot about the food and restaurant business. So anybody that knows me knows I have a passion. I collect pineapples, because pineapples are the symbol of hospitality. And so they're everywhere in my home. And I still carry that piece of the industry with me. You did not know that.
I did not know that.
Yes, I did.
Can I just tell you a little story?
Yes.
Just last night, I made what I think is a pretty amazing pineapple and cucumber salad. It was supposed to have cilantro. I'm one of those, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but there's like 20% of the population that cilantro tastes like soap to. I am.
You're that one, yeah.
I'm that guy.
Yeah.
So we didn't do cilantro. We did basil.
Okay.
But I was actually really, really, I did not know that I was getting ready for my conversation with Aaron.
And audience, I'd just like to say, I sometimes don't get these calls about these great menu items. But anyway, we'll talk about that offline.
Apparently, because you thought that today was just going to be another porch sit for us to have lunch. And you went to my house instead of coming to my office.
I know. I'm always challenged for that. But anyway, so yes, so I still carry that theme of hospitality throughout my life. In my dealings with people, I always try to be hospitable to everyone that I meet, and always to have that theme run through any business relationship, personal relationship, and so and job. So after New York, I had an opportunity to move to South Africa and restart a business for my family. We had a small hotel, and it can be called a guest house because of the number of rooms, in Johannesburg, South Africa. And I did that for 3 years. And I ran into a whole nother plethora of friends and experiences and relationships that just kind of made me who I am today. And then from there, I decided that I was going to repatriate back to the States. And I did not want to necessarily go back to hospitality. So I did a little bit of research and decided I was going to go into human resources, specifically human and organizational performance. And so I sought out that degree at Vanderbilt University at the Owen Graduate School of Management. And I did get that degree with an emphasis in entrepreneurship.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's the second thing that always runs through. That whole hospitality piece is the first, and then from the HR side, it's the people.
Okay.
And then entrepreneurship is always in my DNA. And so a quick thing about that, I did my whole ancestry.com. And I went back through and I started looking at things. And I realized that a lot of my ancestors either owned land or did things. They did very entrepreneurial things in order to pull themselves up. And then my family, my present day family, I have aunts that have owned their own businesses. My mother, who is so amazing, and I'm just going to do a shameless plug. She is Style Enhancer on Instagram. She makes amazing jewelry.
You should do a plug, and if you didn't do it then, I was going to give you a plug later. Mama's coming back to this conversation.
Yeah,
okay,
so.
Okay.
Oh, cool. And I should know better. And she does great jewelry, but she has her own business as well and has done numerous side businesses and things while raising me along with my dad. And for that, I'm very proud. So entrepreneurship comes very naturally to me.
Okay.
And I'm very happy about that. So that leads me to how I left when I graduated from Vandy.
Before you go there, you mentioned this, the discovery of that in your lineage through your ancestry.com results, which I recently got my results as well.
You.
Isn't that really empowering to learn what the bloodline and kind of from a legacy perspective, what's been passed on to you, and then what you then take on as the really natural legacy to pass on to others, not just your family, but to the world.
Absolutely.
And that's just really empowering to know that, you know, in some ways, you were created for this.
Yes, and it's so funny. And what is sometimes in your what you're born with and what you can cultivate. And that's a whole nother
powerful
topic.
That's a podcast in itself.
I know, that's a whole podcast. So we won't dig too deep into that right now, but it was very empowering to find that out.
Okay.
And so after graduating from Owen, shout out to the Commodores, I believe Black and Gold, that I was recruited by Coca-Cola Enterprises to come here and be in their HR rotation for their first ever program for that leadership program.
Which is where you were when I met you.
Yes.
So I know you through the Crown Jewel organization that is the Coca-Cola Enterprise and some of your colleagues there, and knew of the phenomenal work you were doing in the HR space, specifically the work that you were doing around workforce management
and planning strategy.
Mm-hmm. So I was really excited to see, I'm maybe stealing your thunder, but see you take that strategic perspective from a corporate perspective to be able to bring to entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs and business leaders that you're really standing on as your platform today. That's really exciting.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I think that we often take for granted is coming from corporate experiences, the opportunity to take some of that thinking, mm-hmm. some of that rigor, some of that structure and mm-hmm. thinking, and basically take it to some of the more high growth entrepreneurial environments for them to leverage and be able to kind of set up sustainable growth for organizations.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. And I do have to say, Reggie, you know this very well. I was asked to do that job without any prior knowledge of how to do it. But I had a boss that really believed in me and gave me the runway to learn it and build it at the same time. So if you think about it.
Shout out to the bosses that believe in you, right? So if we can just, and I'm being really rude to interrupt you there, but that, I mean, you're apparently going to give me a lot of nuggets that along the way in this conversation. It's so, so imperative to have bosses that believe in you and empower you and to know that they get the best you have to offer by doing so.
Absolutely. And so, and I'm going to piggyback on that and then we can get back to the whole kind of chronology. But the big piece about her, what she did for me, is that I tried to sell her on the fact that I couldn't do it. And she said, no, you can do it because, and this is going back to your point about bosses, and I think really good bosses and really good hiring managers do this. They hire for ability and attitude and not just skill.
Wow.
Because she was my previous boss in another role at Coke, and that's how I got there, because it was always can do. And just from the whole entrepreneur type of thing, I had never done HR. I just went to school for it.
So can we go back for just a second? Like, hey, I keep pulling you back
because
you keep leaving these nuggets. I got to make sure that we. So talk about the notion of hiring for beyond skills and qualifications in terms of capability and attitude. And one of the things that we do within Your Crescendo with our placement on purpose offering is to encourage leaders to think beyond just experience and qualifications for roles and to think about what the forte is, what are their passions, what are their strengths, what are their motivations, and then how do they plug into the work that they feel called to do. If you can consider those things as well, you're going to get your most empowered, most engaged workforce, and you're setting yourself up for much more stronger, compelling, and sustainable business performance.
Agreed.
by the team that you build with that as an approach to do so.
Agreed. And so from taking that aspect of leadership and then thinking about how we think about talent in HR, just to go back to what you were saying, is we have to start looking at how we procure talent in the first place. Because if most things, for example, you can't teach, you can't have somebody go into a role for accounting and they don't know it.
Right,
they have to do accounting. It's certain jobs and roles that you have to know. But I would even say that there are many more that don't. Anything in the services, anything in the people space. And so I find that people, organizations, bosses miss out on good talent because they're looking for this specific set of skills that as this workforce is changing and adapting, is those skills and everything, they look very different. Those aptitudes, those things look very different. And so I think people should hire on and develop on what can be taught and then really look at commitment, skills, those character, those types of things that, to your point, will allow people to be engaged, that will drive your business forward, that will drive things to completion, and also make you look good, because there's something called an employee value proposition. If you have that type of employee employed with you, they are going to go out and be some sort of ambassador for
exactly,
you.
Exactly.
So even if they move on, they can bring like-minded people with them or through them in the organization as well. And so I think a lot of times from a workforce perspective or a talent perspective, we take a short-term view of development and acquisition rather than a very long-term view.
Okay.
And fold in, to your point, the needs, desires, and purpose of the employee.
Outstanding. Yes. Outstanding.
Yeah. So, okay, so I got to Coke, and like I said, I moved on to the European part of it and built the strategic workforce planning practice from scratch. And that's when I learned and was building the airplane in the air. But going back to the original point, that is what I call entrepreneurship.
Okay.
So I literally took nothing. And like I say, spin yarn into gold. I call it alchemy, as most entrepreneurs do.
Okay.
And anybody inside of an organization that is tasked with doing something new. And if you know how hard it is, you have to get people's minds and hearts around it. It's not just doing the work.
Okay.
And it's everything. And so really building a culture of strategic workforce planning. And very proud of that, because a lot of that work was influential in getting it to the board of directors and everything. So that was really good. And I was still able to be in that space of entrepreneurship, but within an organization. And so that's where I really thrived. And so at a point last year, we bought Germany and Spain. We bought the German bottler and the Spanish bottler.
Okay.
And so when that happened, the shift, we became a completely new company, which is Coca-Cola European Partners. And so the headquarters is moving to London. And so my last day at CCE was December of last year. And when we got word that that was going to happen, I started thinking about, what do I want to do next? I didn't want life to be imposed on me. I wanted to impose myself on life.
How about
life.
That? Oh, wow.
You know?
Wow,
you know?
That's a really powerful point of view as well. And I think that, you know, I used to get, it seems really simple, but I I started through a coaching relationship with Jennifer Hale, and she used to have a kind of calling tagline that, you know, she said is really simple, but, you know, your career is called yours for a reason.
That's right.
And all too often in conversations with people and leaders, they feel like either the victim or the lucky person in the story of their career. And it is not always that people play a proactive role to take ownership of the things that are happening to them. They get just kind of navigate with the current that occurs in businesses
that
they happen to associate with.
That's
and
right.
So their impact becomes a series of, you know, circumstances, sometimes really powerful and compelling ones, but more luck than intent.
Right.
And being intentional is really important.
And I'm telling you, and it goes into, take this example of, you know, getting severed from a job and from a company that was very good to me. You know, I've learned so much with them, so I have nothing to say about that. But, you know, it's really about, and it happens with any circumstance in life, that you never know what someone's going through, but it's not about what happens to you. You know the quote, it's not about what happens to you. It's about how you react to what
happens
exactly
to you. That's exactly right.
You know, and so you do have your time that you do things and how you process, but you got to get back up on that horse. And so I decided to start looking for my horse ahead of time. And I sat down and I thought to myself, I said, what are the things that I like to do? And I'll tell you, I've had this practice, but I really didn't identify it, but I did the same thing in South Africa when I decided I wanted to get back to the States. And what did I do? I dissected everything that I had done, every role, every job that I had done. I said, what did I like about it? And this is the advice that I give people that I coach and friends and family. What did I like about it? Can I cobble something together from there that I'm going to enjoy doing? And that's how I got into HR, because, again, I loved people. And I would love to see people grow. And that's something with my staff that I had in South Africa, that the most enjoyable part, aside from the hospitality and serving others, was developing them into hospitality professionals.
How powerful.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's what I did with this. I said, what did I like that I did in my HR career at Coca-Cola? And I loved that planning part. I loved seeing things come together.
And, you know, that's such an empowering and important and often overlooked and not done, kind of checkpoint that everyone should take in their career,
mm-hmm.
to look back through the experiences that they've had and to pull out
mm-hmm.
the whispers that have been indicating
mm-hmm.
those things that I call passions,
mm-hmm.
that you can then frame up and then be intentional about pursuing those passions. And, you know, as we're in an environment where purpose is beginning to become a part of the conversation a lot more frequently than when, you know, we felt like
sure.
we were bringing in this new three-headed monster of a thing to
sure.
be able to do. And so, but one of the things that is even starting to bring on a little cynicism is this notion of pursuit of passions
mm-hmm.
as a career
mm-hmm.
compass.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll hear is, you know, people talk about, well, what if you pursue your passion and you're not very good at it? I mean, frankly, passions are only one thing to consider.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you were sitting on a dashboard and you're trying to navigate your career intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the dials that you're looking at is like, what are you passionate about?
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the best indication of what you're passionate about is if you look through the track record of your career and
mm-hmm.
pull out those things. For me, it was very similar. Even in light of all of the, insanely difficult projects to take systems live
mm-hmm.
and, you know, crazy shop floors being reengineered and, you know, a number of strategic projects, I've always been really drawn to and empowered by encouraging, particularly the client, colleague I'm working with,
mm-hmm.
beyond just the work,
right.
but like what this meant for them personally and professionally.
Right.
And then, of course, my, you know, clients and colleagues. So we kind of have that in common.
Yeah. And I'll even say to you, Reggie, it even before, you know, when people say that, and this is, I don't know if you saw my Facebook Live the other day, but it was like, what to do when you don't know what to do.
Wow.
And it's be curious. That's one of my traits that I try to hone. But a lot of times people don't know their passion and can't pursue it because they haven't done enough work to, like, explore.
Wow.
You know, to kind of figure out what it is that you want to do. And
yeah.
then moreover, in your career and in my career, I really gave every role my best.
Mm-hmm.
And so and let it challenge me and everything. And that's another way that you can find your passion, about seeing what you don't like, what you do. But if you approach, and this is something else that I tell people, but if you approach your role as just a job, instead of an adventure or a career, no matter what your job is,
right.
you run the risk of never finding out what your
wow.
passion is.
Wow.
So I just wanted to, that made me think of that when you were speaking.
Wow.
And so when the severance happened, that's how Hexagon Outsourcing Group came about.
Yay, Hexagon Outsourcing.
Hexagon Outsourcing Group. And I'll, for your listeners, and I haven't told really anyone this,
okay.
and so this is a nugget for your listeners,
okay.
is that people have asked me, why do I do hexagons? You know a little bit of story about when I started the Honeycomb Life.
I absolutely do, but you need to pretend I don't,
okay,
so that you
I
can
won't.
Share it
yes.
with my listeners.
Yes, but the reason why I like hexagons is because it's symbolic of something for me, and it's symbolic of honey. And so because I am a Christian and I'm really unapologetic about that, and I do my best to walk that walk, there's a Proverbs 16:23, I believe, that says, encouraging words are like a honeycomb, sweet to the body and healing to the soul. And so the reason why you'll
That's
see hexagons
so I'm sorry, we
is,
just can't keep running over that.
Let me just finish
okay.
this because I know.
Okay. All right.
But the reason why I choose hexagons, because in everything I do, I try to bring hospitality. In everything I do, I try to bring encouragement. And you'll say, well, how does that fit with strategic planning? That's because my whole mission is to help people get to where they're going.
Wow.
And in a systematic way, period. That's it. And because I'm good at that, I like to do that. And there are a lot of touch points around that.
Okay.
But to me, it folds back into the honeycomb.
Okay.
And why I use the hexagon.
So I would like for you to connect the dots even a little further back. I happen to know of this story, mm-hmm. but I'd like for you to share it with your listeners just because it goes to this whole point of, particularly when you're at a point where you're trying to frame up your strategic framework for going forward mm-hmm. based on purpose and passions and gifts and motivations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that you've been getting these little whispers all along. And
sure.
and when you're at a place where you're building a strategic plan, you should take that as an opportunity to take all this collection of all these little whispers
right.
and consider them as input into that plan. And so I know that your story around encouragement is really deeply rooted in the relationship you have with your mother
sure.
and her role as an encourager for you.
Sure.
And I know.
I will talk about it.
Please share.
So everyone, Reggie, because I've been preparing myself for Reggie for at least the year that I've known him. I'm good to go today.
Okay.
I've sealed myself for you.
Good.
I knew what you were going to do. Anyway, so originally I had started, my whole path with Reggie was to, I birthed this company called The Honeycomb Life. And it was really important to me going back to, the name of it was important to me going back to the story I just told around Proverbs 16:23. And the reason why encouragement is so important to me is one, my mother will tell you, I came out of the womb hugging people, apparently,
wow.
you know, and
wow.
so that's just.
What a
just
powerful, you know, prophecy, though.
Who I am, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went through a difficult time in my childhood where I was severely bullied. And so my mother, she would write these encouraging notes and put them in my pocket. And fold them up, and I mean real teeny. You remember that notebook paper and everything? And she would tear them and everything, and she would put either words of encouragement or Lord knows she's been giving me scriptures since the day I was born to repeat and recite. And so she's been folding those up as a child for me to take to school and do whatever to repeat to myself. And so it really helped me, and that I really believe formed who I am today, whereby I want to emote that love, that encouragement to other people, because we all have things that we're going through, whether it's good and bad, you can still use encouragement wherever you go. And so that's really foundational to what the Honeycomb Life is, but it's more foundational to who I am as an individual, how I choose to show up in the world, how I choose to engage with others. And that's irrespective of how they engage with me.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
I really try my best. I haven't always succeeded in the area, but it is something that I endeavor to do.
Okay.
So that's the story, and that's how it connects. And I believe, I know you were concerned about this, but I do believe that there are many elements from the Honeycomb Life that are involved in Intersync and woven through Hexagon Outsourcing Group. And I just want to pause for a second to talk about the whole acronym of Hexagon Outsourcing Group.
Please do.
You know,
please
the
do.
Acronym is HOG. And you know, we know what hogs do. They get everything they came to get, honey. And so that's what we're here to help you to do. We're help you through our strategic planning process, help you to get everything you came here to get, and weed out the things that don't matter and focus on the things that do.
Wow.
And so
wow.
that is why that acronym, you'll never see a pig in any of our logos.
Oh.
but that is what the HOG acronym the sentiment is behind it.
So then talk a little bit about the type of work you aspire to do through Hexagon Outsourcing.
So there are a couple of things. So the first is I want to help individuals and teams realize whatever goal they're trying to get to.
Okay.
I don't go farther out than 3 years of planning because it becomes esoteric at that point, but it's still enough time where you can kind of shift and pivot if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
And so the strategic planning piece is that. However, foundational to that are you can have dreams as an individual, or you could have collective dreams as an organization or as mm-hmm. a team, as a small business. And so I think foundational is that everybody's trying to get to a purpose. So, for example, I just read this article the other day about this young man. I don't even think he's 30 yet. He's worth $6.1 billion. And how he did that is because, and people will say, oh, following your passion doesn't get you anywhere. But apparently this young man was passionate about technology. Okay. And that was his passion.
Mm-hmm.
And he developed this program whereby doctors now can use this platform. It's like a flat screen built in technology where it helps people, it helps patients get the care they need in a more streamlined fashion.
Wow.
And
wow.
We already know, where we are from a healthcare perspective and what we need as a country. And so I would submit to you, he did follow his passion.
Wow.
He just didn't, and his passion could have been business, but it was certainly technology. His partner loved technology as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did. A passion just doesn't have to be service related. It could be business related. I know people that just like business.
Right.
So they don't care what type of company they
right,
start,
right.
but they enjoy building the business.
Mm-hmm.
That is a passion. And I think what you do and your work, and I think what people need to do more in general is expand their view and their outlook on what passion really is.
Wow.
You know, and so it just doesn't have to be, I like to, you know, people want to say, oh, I love to garden. Yeah, but expand your horizons, which is why exposure is important.
Right.
And which is why curiosity is important,
right.
what we talked about earlier. So, yeah, so
that's. And that's a really good point. And mm-hmm. not to interrupt you, but
sure.
like just to take your example, right? If someone says to you, I'm passionate about gardening, usually passions are, and pardon the pun, buried beneath that surface
sure.
occupation. So like if they say I'm passionate about gardening, I would ask more probing
mm-hmm.
questions. So
mm-hmm.
what is it that you like about gardening? I like the process of creating a fertile soil,
mm-hmm.
planting seeds,
mm-hmm.
and watching seasons bring those seeds to bear fruit
right.
or flowers. You know, so can you find or have you in your career seen examples of that in the way that you've done work? Well, come to think of it, I do like planting seeds in people
right, right.
and watching them come forth,
right.
you know, watering the seeds, creating
right.
fertile soil. And so it's just an analogy for something that could be really, they're really passionate
sure.
about. And to be able to express that passion in a way that is gratuitous, not only for them personally,
mm-hmm.
but professionally,
yes.
and for the teams and the organizations that they exist in, is really empowering.
Right.
Not only for the business benefits that comes from that,
sure.
but then also you realize that you were created for this, and like there was some reason that this thing called gardening
mm-hmm.
was really near and dear to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
people, you know, may see those connectedness as, you know, kludgy or be a little cynical about
mm-hmm,
them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how and why they make sense. But what I will tell you is that the people that figure it out, like yourself,
right.
are now reaping the benefits of having done that work
sure.
to think deeply and introspective about themselves.
Sure, absolutely.
Erin, this has been a great conversation, and I can't wait to continue it. I'm going to give our listeners a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up with a new segment that I mentioned to you.
Sure.
And I would like to have you share insights. You've been in a number of different environments, both from a coaching and leadership development perspective, and then corporate from an HR perspective. You sat across the table from people that were talking to you around concerns without their boss around.
Sure.
And so what I want you to do is think about the collective insights when you've had those moments where you said, if their leader only knew this
right.
about them
mm-hmm.
from those conversations, it would really help them in this way. So
sure.
think about like what nuggets you can pull from what your leader to tell leaders, you know, what insight, what you can share that people share with you
sure.
when they're not around.
Okay.
So we'll do that just after, but we'll take a really short break now and we'll come back.
Okay, great.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels, and so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up. The number 2 magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Well, we are back. We are here, listeners. If you're just joining us, we're with Erin White, CEO of Hexagon Outsourcing Group. they embrace the persona of a hog that is grabbing up everything there is and getting rid of what they don't need. I love that analogy. We're going to ask her, we're going to pick her brain a little bit here. And you can do so either by thinking on a specific conversation or just bringing the nuggets of a collective converse, you know, collective conversations that you've had. If you were able to talk to a group of leaders about what their people say to you when they're not around and share those insights in a way that empowers them to lead better, give us some of those insights.
So I think one of the ones that stand out to me as I reflect, and I'll speak on a collective basis, is the difference in development versus just starkly looking at performance.
Okay.
And so, you know, in the HR space, we do a lot of ratings and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you'll see that the organization is more committed to the ratings than to the people to develop them. And so I think one of the things that they would want to say, employees would want to know, is honestly something we talked about earlier. Help me understand how I fit into this organization.
Right.
Although the career is theirs, it's the onus is also on the organization and the leaders to say, this is how we see you collectively as employees fitting in the organization for a long time, for a short time, and for all of these things. The second thing that I would say is, since the world of work is changing so much, and then the length of time that individuals are staying with organizations, I think that people are open to new and different looking career paths, to say, or different employee organization relationships, so to say, that they would want to see leaders and organizations keep up with the times.
Wow.
And so when you're in a smaller business, it tends to do that because it has to.
Okay.
But I'll put a pin in that because that's not always the case. But larger organizations don't seem to turn that quickly. And I think while a complete organization may not have that ability to do that, smaller groups do.
Okay.
And what I would have put a pin in is that smaller organizations, small businesses, as we call them, sometimes they take their viewpoints from corporate America and use them in the small business, but oftentimes the same you can't really work that way.
It doesn't scale down.
Right, it doesn't scale down.
Right.
And you have to become more flexible and more nimble in your ideology about how you develop people, if you develop them, because a lot of times in small business, there's no development.
Right.
And, you know, and so you have lots of turnover and lots of issues and no cohesiveness and a lack of culture. And so those become very important in small businesses, too.
I'm chuckling because this message that she's giving to you now, she is going to laugh when I remember that when I share this. Erin just gave me a really tough love lesson about this recently. If you know me and have been around Your Crescendo and events that I host, you know that from my corporate experience in particular, I'm going to talk about some things that Accenture is doing in the performance management. But with, you know, through my, you know, global management consulting experience with Accenture, I've become accustomed to a certain level of quality and caliber about products and deliverables.
Yes.
And Erin was recalling when I was having some, you know, kind of tough times and the ebbs and flows of entrepreneurship that's absolutely required. So when I was, you know, kind of thinking about costs and, you know, where I could have saved costs, Erin had a really tough lesson. She was like, remember that conference? You remember that handout, that deliverable that you had that was beautifully printed, spiral bound, glossy paper? I think you could dial that back a little bit. And she's absolutely right, because, and frankly, you know, it was the content that mattered.
That's exactly
it was
right.
The content that mattered. And so as we're having this conference and, you know, and I, you know, have grown accustomed to, you know, printing these myself, I thought, you know, big, bad, let's take this conference to the next level. Let's take it to the professional printer when we had to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's really the kind of example of something that doesn't, is a thing that you've become accustomed to that really doesn't or shouldn't scale down, not if you're going to be a prudent you know, right. small business entrepreneur that you want to try to create a sustainable business.
That's right. And that's why strategic planning is important, because I remember someone telling me, I can't remember who it was. Let me try to think. But they gave me the, what was it? The good, better, best analogy, mm-hmm. or it was, what was that thing you used to say?
I about, used good, better, best.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know yeah. it was you. I'm
okay.
joking. Yeah, I completely know it was you.
Okay.
So all I'm saying is that we have to take the same approach.
Right.
First year good, second year better,
right.
third year best.
Right.
How
right.
do we get there? How do
right.
we scale up instead
right.
of trying to use a budget from a global corporation
right.
in our small business? Because things can still look good and be good. And like you said, the content matters. But that also has to scale down. So a lot of the things, what I'm saying is that employees would not tell their leaders in the larger organizations is about how do I fit here?
Right.
What do I look like?
Right.
For smaller organizations, it could be, you know, I want more development. Is there a career path with me?
Right.
Or
right.
simply honesty. This
right.
is a small business. I envision you here for 2 years, but we're going to – what if the conversation went like this, Reggie? I envision you here for 2 years, but while you're here, we're going to develop you the best that you can be. So when you leave here, we equip you to go and get another job. Because
wow.
who knows that if that person, as you grow as a small business, won't boomerang back in with more experience from other companies, but we don't, we take a larger organizations or leaders in general have a lack kind of mentality. We just don't want that person to go,
wow.
you
wow.
know, but that is, we need to turn how we look at work, how we look at the work relationship, we need to turn it on its head so we can fit in all the spheres that are developing right now.
So let's go back to another nugget you dropped that I want to make sure that we take a look at
okay.
around the notion that the insight that you want to share with leaders around a performance, I'm going to use my words here,
sure.
but performance management process that's focused on growth
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, you know, measurement, assessment, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, here's your strengths and weaknesses and, you know, leaving people from with the conversation, really obsessing over the bad things that were said
mm-hmm.
through them through a process. You know, what I've been able to see in the performance management space, and you'll know better because this really is in the HR domain,
mm-hmm.
is that practice of those processes are starting to evolve. The good example is that I mentioned earlier is that, you know, Accenture has gone away from its from the official
mm-hmm.
appraisals and the ratings process
mm-hmm.
and haven't been, you know, part of the culture where that was deeply ingrained and that
mm-hmm.
really felt very pivotal to the careers
mm-hmm.
and how they're valued.
Yep. Yep.
That's a major, major, mm-hmm. major transition. So that insight that you shared, you know, how are you seeing that? How are you seeing that trend, you know, start to evolve in the HR space? Like what things, you know, what best practices are either going away or being adopted to better evolve with the need to grow people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I was in a very large organization. Some of the things that I'm seeing are more along the lines of conversation.
Okay.
And so, you know, communication, whether it's in business or anywhere else, is huge. And it will make or break
mm-hmm.
any type of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when you shift performance management to coaching conversations, you get more empowered, and you now are, because a conversation takes two people. So you're involving the leader and the employee in the conversation of not only how to develop that employee, but hopefully how to make the team better, the company better. And you're looking at it like this. What performance management from a legacy standpoint does is you're basically managing to the grade, right? So you have people fighting over a finite amount of ratings, because why? Ratings are then attached to bonuses in a lot of times in organizations. And so you aren't really looking at the what, but lesser the how, even though you say you are. So how things get done kind of falls by the wayside, no matter what is on a piece of paper, than if they get done.
Got it.
And so you have to, at some point, say, I'm not sure what Accenture is doing right now, but I do believe there's still a mix of performance, because you have to excel in
right.
an organization.
Right.
But there is more the conversation has to be around how do we excel together?
Right.
And instead of taking this very subjective view, which is what legacy performance management systems do, because they typically benchmark against other employees
instead
of a standard.
That's really empowering. I think that that is a nice segue to one of the other things that I was really excited about having you on the show today.
Okay.
And that is this insight that I want to try to have you connect the dots and bring these two perspectives and of your experiences together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the conversation that you and I often engage on is having, thank you for trusting me with the opportunity to work with you, to frame up your forte,
mm-hmm.
and then to empower and activate it.
Yep.
All right. So that is its own set of mutual benefit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Take that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then take the conversation you led Coca-Cola Enterprise and other organizations through from a workforce management and strategy perspective.
Right.
Give me your take on what workforces look like if there are – so that conversation happened because you took the initiative to make it happen
mm-hmm.
around you. Give me your insights on what the workforce looks like when that becomes a standard thing that everyone does, that they take the time to frame up their own personal strategic framework based on their strengths, passions, motivations,
mm-hmm.
discover their purpose, lay out their visions with goals and action items, all the things that you're about. Imagine our workforces where that became a standard process. How do you see that? What does that look like? What are the merits of that? What are the challenges for that?
So let me start with the challenges and how my brain works. It takes time.
Okay.
And so but it doesn't necessarily have to take a lot of time. So let me back up. It's perceived that it's going to take more time than it's worth.
Okay.
So that's the perception. And so then you have to factor in everything that gets into that, which is the resistance
okay.
and the challenge and stuff like that.
Okay.
But if it did look like that, I believe that you would have more fluidity.
Say more what you mean by that.
So I believe organizations would be more fluid. You would have less compulsion to keep people in boxes and to have them be able to move. So say
mm-hmm.
if, like, for example, one of the things I've always wanted to learn is sales, but I think I had one sales job when I was in high school.
Okay.
But because I'm an HR professional, and for the audience, I'm putting up air quotes, no one really ever looked at me to then go into sales.
Okay.
And try my hand at that.
Right.
Because most organizations, the structure is rigid. And
right.
So you would have to build that out and change some things.
Right.
Through organizational design.
Mm-hmm.
So what I believe is if people did do that, it would force the organization to kind of, and some of the newer companies that are out now do
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
to be more flexible in managing someone's career. Because I believe, I would love this, in as I grow my company, to have employees be total professionals or have general management mindset. That's
mm-hmm.
something that I've tried to do for myself. Is do you understand sales? Do you understand HR? You can, if you want to specialize, then go ahead. But how do we essentially create a leadership program as a way of life?
Right.
You know, a rotational
right.
program as a way of life.
Right.
And it would be very difficult,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think that if we took the time to approach and engage all of those things with individuals, we would have more retention mm-hmm. and engagement. And then we would be able to look at retention very differently, as I talked about earlier. Do we necessarily want people in organizations for lifetimes? Not anymore. That's
mm-hmm.
just not how it goes. However, do we want alumni? Do we want ambassadors to our
mm-hmm.
organizations? Should we think
mm-hmm.
about it like that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would turn the world of work on its head. If you think about what kind of work we do, you know, freelancing, you know, in Europe, the freelancing workforce is huge,
mm-hmm.
you know, so
mm-hmm.
what, yeah, the consultant landscape is huge. And now a lot of companies are not necessarily having permanent workforces, but they're engaging. You can do this on for specific things, mm-hmm. but they're engaging people that way because mm-hmm. people want to be more free
right.
to go to their child's play, to
right.
work it from 10 to 5 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're changing the world of work if you engage everybody's kind of total person in work.
I love that as a broad insight, and I want to go deeper on it.
Okay.
And to do so, I want to make it really personal for you.
Mm-hmm.
So
you only get one of those in broadcast.
Okay, well, good. We got 10 more minutes, so I'm going to go.
You had the other one last segment.
Okay, can I use one for the next broadcast?
Okay, okay.
All right, good. I really want this one.
Okay.
And actually, Mom would appreciate the other one. So that one was for her. This one's
was
for
it?
Yes.
we'll go with that.
Hey, Mom. Okay, so taking that insight, let's play out a scenario. And let's say when you got to the point where you said, you know what, I want to be proactive about framing up my personal path forward.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of said, this is my forte. Let's say there were some insights from that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was this passion around entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was this calling you have around encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you were in the kind of organization where you can have an open and candid conversation around these things that are seemingly not directly related to your job, but then someone can say, if I look forward into the future and I see that Erin left us
mm-hmm.
because these were two things she was really passionate about and that we didn't create the environment for those passions to come forth. Where in our organization can we give those things the opportunity to move forward? Just assume for a second that we would like to
mm-hmm.
sustain your knowledge of the systems, of mm-hmm. the filing systems and the workforces. We want to mm-hmm. be able to keep that and bring it forth in a new way. What would that conversation look like for you to have bold conversations about where your career was headed and or what was next for you? So from my perspective, you know, this whole notion of encouragement, it's not difficult to look to see where encouragement within that organization can pay substantial benefits,
mm-hmm.
right? So maybe there's like, you know, let's just be kind of crazy about it. Maybe there's some new, like the role you took as chief encouragement officer
mm-hmm.
for the Honeycomb Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some chief encouragement. Like, how do I encourage people
mm-hmm.
to stay focused on their, you know, on themselves and their plans and their goals?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do I activate that within the company? Like, what does that conversation look like? And
mm-hmm.
are we, as a total corporate landscape, anywhere near enabling those kinds of conversations?
So I'll answer your second question first. No, I don't believe so. I believe if you break down corporate into small, medium, or new and old corporate, I think in new corporate you are.
Okay.
It's tough to, because the question itself is broad. So, I would have to make my answer a little bit more specific. I think in newer organizations, it's easier to do that, because they're so new and their thinking is completely different. And then in larger organizations, to be fair to them, it's just harder to change structures
mm-hmm.
because what's tied into that is compensation and bonus. I mean, it's a
right.
lot tied into
right.
it.
Right.
So to be fair to them, but what I do think is that it can be done twofold, because it's important to hold it up and look at it from all the different angles. And those angles are, one, I know what you're doing here, and in the meantime, something that you're excited about, can I put you on a project? That goes a long way
mm-hmm,
for people.
Mm-hmm.
But also, can you put them on a project without overwhelming them?
Right,
so it's all
right.
about the structure and the timing and kind of
right.
that. That's the first thing. And then, or, I remember when I was applying for jobs, I had an employer tell me in no uncertain terms I couldn't do anything on the side. I think that's a big mistake for
mm-hmm.
a lot of companies.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very big mistake. You want somebody who's willing to wake up at 5 a.m, work on their own stuff, go to the gym, get ready, come to work for you, and then leave and then hustle for their own stuff.
Right.
You want that, because then what happens is they're committed to everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to some research I was doing on curiosity, and it's tangential to this topic, is when you are curious and inquisitive about one thing, something else that is probably, it doesn't even have to be related, but
right.
something you're also doing right on the side of it,
right.
automatically you learn from that too when
right.
you weren't even looking to learn from that.
Right.
So if
right.
that follows from you doing what you need to do for organization and doing what you need to do for yourself, and oh, by the way, if now your organization is of the mindset that people come and go and we're fluid, you got what you need.
Wow.
You won't
wow.
have to come from that lack mentality of holding
mm-hmm.
on to people and know
mm-hmm.
you can't look at anything else
mm-hmm.
and you can't do anything else, because that the world is changing.
Mm-hmm.
The world of work is changing. And I think people have to get on board. So what that would look like, that's the second piece it would look like. And then third, I think if we are thinking about having people kind of focus on their passions, focus on their motivations, exploration is huge. It goes back to the statement that I said earlier around how can we allow people to do work with
mm-hmm.
an organization? But you got to set that up as a culture, because you don't want other individuals to say, oh, I got so much work to do and I have to talk to this person, because it's not a culture of service to others.
Wow.
So you have to build all of that into the culture. And I think is it impossible to do with other organizations, larger, older organizations? No. I think it's easier to do with newer organizations and growing and scaling organizations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's impossible for either.
That's really powerful. Just give me your perspective on, maybe I'll see where you go with this.
Okay.
Do you think it's worth the point that you talked about for companies to make this transition would require them to be more fluid in their infrastructure on career paths,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's worth it for companies to do that?
Oh, I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the long run, you know, if I, and not to pick on Blockbuster or anything, but, you know, if they had stayed ahead of the curve,
right.
Netflix wouldn't be doing, or at least they would be super competitive
right.
to do it.
Right.
I think a lot of times you're going to have to say, how do I fit and get on trend so you can grab a piece of the pie? Because,
wow.
you know, work is different. Talent is higher. And only the best are going to grab it. So
wow.
you got to stay on trend with that.
Well, that is outstanding. So as we work towards the end of our conversation, which I have really enjoyed,
thank you so much for having me.
I want to give you the opportunity. Somewhere there's a listener listening to this podcast, either later or here live even,
mm-hmm.
That you would love to have a conversation with.
Sure.
Profile that person. Like, if you are this person, like, and I really would like for you to think about how do you tightly define or frame up the profile of someone that could really benefit from a conversation with you, whether it be with just Aaron or CEO of Hexagon Outsourcing
mm-hmm.
or Chief Encouragement Officer of the Honeycomb Life. All of your amazing dimensions, I will not let go of it. I know. Can I just tell you there's some, anyway, there's a big thing happening. Yes, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
But talk to that someone that potentially would love to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me who they are so they know to reach out to us and do so.
A highly ambitious person that sees the benefit of talking to someone outside of themselves with
mm-hmm.
professional expertise to get them to a big, hairy goal they
okay.
have. And that's really what it is.
Can I do that?
Yes, you can.
All right. I'll sign up for that. I think I need all of those. But Aaron, thank you so much for spending your afternoon. This has definitely been a power lunch. I guess we should have lunch now.
Sure. Yes.
This has been outstanding. Thank you all, listeners, for joining us today. As we continue this series of, I think, really powerful conversations with people that are in pursuit of purpose in their business and careers, I would encourage you, as we close out, you'll have the opportunity to hear an amazing song that I love, Shante Khan's Free Your Dreams,
mm-hmm.
Which is a great soundtrack to have playing while you're doing things in pursuit of just that.
Yes.
And I wish you could see Aaron's yes face that she's making right now. We love that song. And it will play here as we close out the show. And then I would also encourage you to go and download it. She's kind enough to allow us to use the song as a soundtrack for the show, which I actually love the generosity of that. So thank you, everyone. Please continue to go forward and have a prosperous week. And as always, we encourage you to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo.
Your heart.